Hi Josh, thanks for joining me in this conversation. So today we're going to talk about digital learning. What is digital learning?
Well, if I had my way, I would not use the term digital learning. I would either use the term learning or learning in a digital age. I feel like there's a lot of terms going around now to define what we do in the digital space, whether it's blended learning, online learning, distance learning, remote learning. I think we've really come to a point now where education doesn't happen without technology because we live in a digital age. And that's why I like the term digital learning, because I feel like it encompasses everything that we currently bring into education.
Well, technology has always had a role. So digital learning, we're talking about digital technology. So maybe unpack that a bit more. What type of technologies do you think are the key technologies in this day and age?
Well, I think anything that we can be creative enough to incorporate into our learning design is a viable inclusion into education, really. I think the best way to approach it would be to go where our learners already are. So mobile is obviously going to be a big part of that. But also designing learning in a way that it's actually engaging on the devices that we're using, whether we're using devices or not. So, you know, I think when we're talking digital learning, we often forget the face-to-face component, which is obviously crucial in any age, whether it's a digital age or otherwise. And that's relevant to, you know, especially in CNI's portfolio, like SAE, for instance. I mean, there's technology everywhere.
Well, that's an interesting point, because CNI has quite a diverse collection of disciplines. SAE, where you've got a lot of technophiles, you know, we teach about technology, we teach technology, but do we teach with technology to enough level of success, do you think?
Not to be too critical of our educators, because, you know, our educators are the reason we're here. But I think we've got a long way to go to really harness digital technologies to get the best out of them to take education into the digital age fully. I think even though we teach the use of certain technologies in places like SAE, it's the teaching through technology where I think the whole sector is lagging behind, and it's such a complex it's a complex issue. So it's definitely not a criticism of educators or educational leaders or academic leaders. It's just education is a very complex field, and taking it into the digital age and making the most of what we can now do seems to be lagging behind other sectors where innovation is more at the forefront.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about other sectors because they're always good to learn from. But in a way, digital learning, we've been talking about things, what it's not. You know, when we talk about online learning and digital learning, how would, you know, if you've arrived here from outer space and you're explaining what's the difference between online learning and digital learning, or is that a useful distinction?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't know if the distinction is useful, but let's hang out in the distinction for a moment. We'll see what I think about it. I think online has become ubiquitous with, you know, having a learning management system, which event becomes a kind of storage facility for PDFs and other really basic digitized rather than digitalized resources. And maybe we can unpack that a bit later too. But the idea that we scan documents, put them in some kind of storage place, and that's online, that seems to be what online learning has become defined as.
Well, isn't that's more like technologically enhanced distance learning, where you've got a passive repository. Instead of sticking it in the mail, you can do it quickly by putting it in an LMS or emailing.
Exactly. But that seems to be what online learning has become. You know, I remember at the beginning of my foray into digital learning, it would have been about 7 years ago now. Well, I mean, I was in the classroom using all sorts of technologies to try and enhance my classes, but leaving the classroom to really focus on digital learning, specifically learning design at the time. I remember thinking, this isn't it. There's something better, and there was this constant pursuit to finding something better. And but even today, 2020, you do find a lot of institutions are scanning PDFs, chucking them in their LMS, and that's online learning. And I mean, that's not, as I said, it's not a criticism because it might be the best that some institutions can do, but as a viable ongoing model to augment and perhaps even replace the campus one day, it's not going to work. So that's where I guess it'd be useful to define digital learning, but go on.
Well, you're right. I mean, digitizing, when I first trained as in teaching, educational technology was a subject. The only thing is we were dealing with overhead transparencies and cassette players. You youngins in the listening audience, I'll explain what they are one day.
I found my Walkman the other day.
Well, there you go. Well, that had a disc in it. Or no, you mean with
With
a
a
cassette.
cassette. Yeah. It's on display in my house.
They were technologies, and bringing, sound recordings and projection into the classroom was quite innovative. And the idea was not so much to show off technology, it was engagement, wasn't it? And that's really, I'm going to suggest to you where the importance is. It's not a question of using technologies, how do you best engage learners?
Yeah, and I think that goes so much beyond, like further beyond digital learning. I'll come back to digital learning in a second, but yeah, that term engagement, I think, there's so much to engage a learner on a campus, well beyond what happens in the lecture theatre or in a tutorial or in their, when they're studying on their own. But what does it mean in a digital environment? Well, put it this way, a PDF scan could be highly engaging if it's got a good amount of, well, not even an amount, but if it's been designed well, is exactly what that learner needs and is something they're deeply interested in, well, that can be engaging. But you're going to have some pretty sensational graphic designers for your PDFs to be engaging.
Well, actually, maybe that's the distinction we need to go to. It's not so much PDF because that's just a format, but we're talking about the form of knowledge, form of information presented. So it could be still image, could be written text, it could be moving image. This is what we're talking about, interactive images. That's where the richness comes in, doesn't it, with the digital space?
Exactly. And that can be online or it could be on offline on your digital device. So that's where that online distinction gets a bit tricky. But that's right. We have these digital devices that are so powerful. Everyone's got one in their pocket. We've got tablets, we've got laptops, and you can do all sorts of things on them. You can play video, the animation, and the visuals can be incredible. So why wouldn't we do that? And I guess that's what I've been working on the last few years, and specifically in Navitas with some of the strategic projects we've been working on. It's going, like, I know I keep mentioning PDFs, but it just seems like that's where a lot of people still are. We need to get beyond what you can fit on a document and think more about whatever this learning outcome is and whatever the assessment that tells us that that learning outcome has been achieved. What are the activities that can really help learners and help students achieve those outcomes? So we can assess them and say, okay, you've got that, you understand that, great. And it might be a PDF in the form of a journal article that needs to be read and understood and synthesized and then, demonstrated in some way that understanding has been gained. Or it might be the form of an animation or an interactive PDF or an H5P element where there's a hotspot or a click to reveal or something like that. It's never always going to be something that fits on a piece of paper. And I guess that's the beauty of digital learning is if you've got the capability to do so, you can create an activity that is going to help achieve that learning outcome that goes well beyond what you can do on a piece of paper.
I suppose there is a, well, there's a bias, and we're talking about higher education substantively, because Navitas is in the tertiary sector, mainly in higher education, and there is a bias towards written word. Anything else, there is this misunderstanding that it belongs to the realm of entertainment. Sound recordings, moving image, most people encounter it in the form for entertainment. To actually include it in serious learning, people would balk at. That seems to be a pattern. That seems to be an obstacle that I know a lot of educator colleagues have a problem with.
Yeah, I think it goes beyond education in a way when you're talking about multimodality. That bias towards text, I mean, I feel like that bias really doesn't belong in the age that we're in, because text now is just made up of pixels, just like any picture or any moving image. You know, if you start to think of text made up of pixels, that really changes your viewpoint on how you analyze not just discourse, but communication more generally. I think if you're limiting yourself to text, which, you know, is something that's going to happen a lot in academia, because, you know, it's the way that a lot of academic people will know how to communicate their ideas. But communication has gone so much further beyond text that I think if we're not addressing that in education, and not just in the subjects that talk about that, we're limiting ourselves. You know, we live in an age where you can have Netflix on your phone now. People are watching Netflix on the bus.
but that is the problem, isn't it? If someone comes into a space, there's to get that engagement, there's around managing the expectations when they're moving into an education space as opposed to moving into an entertainment space. Or is that different?
I don't know if we can survive if that distinction remains, because, you know, I think it's a cop out for education to say, well, we'll save the good looking production for Netflix and Stan and other streaming services, but when you log into our LMS, it's going to be academic and, you know, bland. It might be understandable, but it's not sustainable.
So maybe an analogy would be a bit like seating. The seats you sit on in the movie theater are going to be different to the pews you sit on in a church. One's designed to make you comfortable, and the one's maybe designed to make you uncomfortable.
And I think we want our learners to be comfortable. Let's get them. I mean, the thing is, when things are on a screen, the design becomes so important. You know, I think we need to ensure that what we're creating is at least engaging enough to have a second glance at. You know, if you're fighting these, you know, even you go on a newspaper website, I mean, there's so much there. You go on Netflix and, you know, it starts playing before you even press anything. Digital media now is such that if you're not making an effort around how it's designed, you're really going to be struggling to get engagement. So let's get it looking good for a start. And once we've got the eyeballs on the screen, let's make it as easy as possible for our learners to engage in what we're trying to do for them.
Well, this is an interesting aspect, because I know we've been talking in broad terms, but this is a serious aspect to learning design. If it's not just about engagement, but to be able, there's a psychology around design. Design and the look and feel of it isn't just about aesthetics, is it?
No, I think aesthetics are really important, but not so much. Not for its own sake, but it's definitely important. You want at least for your learners to want to be there. You know, it's like going into a campus. If a physical campus is an awful place, they're not going to want to go there. It's the same in an online environment. If it's this kind of bland, stark environment where it's just, you know, links to other pages that have links to PDFs, and there's just no brand identity, there's no visual design aspect to it. They might still do it, but it's not like they're going to be enjoying it. And they can enjoy it. Like, or they could, even better, they just don't think about it because the design is so good, so user-friendly, that it's just elegant and simple, and they're in and they're learning and they're not having to engage in what I sometimes call digital archaeology, figuring out, now, where's my schedule? Okay, now I've figured that out. Now, where is, what do I have to do before the first virtual workshop or first webinar? You know, if they can click in, get through what they need to get through with as little cognitive effort as possible, they can save that cognitive load to actually focus on their learning rather than figuring out where stuff is. That's not going to happen by accident. You need to design that.
Yeah. It's an interesting point. So you're actually focusing their energies on learning rather than trying to navigate a difficult or poorly designed learning module.
Yeah, and I'll bring in an example. I've a few years ago, I did a diploma of training design and development. I won't say where I did it. And don't check my LinkedIn either. But it was fully online. I thought, wow, diploma of training design and development online. This is going to be the greatest online learning experience ever. And that's where I came up with the term digital archaeologist, because I'm sure there are digital archaeologists, but the way I meant it was they had Blackboard and then they weren't using Blackboard that well. I don't think they knew how to. And so then they created a Google site as well, and then they weren't communicating through either channel, so they just sent a bunch of emails, and they all seemed to contradict each other. And so, you know, I was studying it as part of my job at the time, and there were a few other people also doing it. And we were all sat there with our laptops open going, now what do we have to do this week? And we're going from one spot to the other trying to figure it out. I mean, I think we need to get to the point where that, whatever you call it, whether it's an LMS or a portal or a digital campus or whatever you're calling it or what your institution is calling it, where that student is logging in, that is the digital version of the campus that they walk into. It should be as streamlined and as user-friendly and as high quality as that face-to-face environment. That means it needs to be clear on what needs to happen. You know, what am I doing this week? When are my things due? Where is the link to my session? That should all be self-evident. Keep the load low on that cognitive effort so I can start really focusing when I get easily, because of the elegant UX and UI, I get to the point where, all right, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to focus. Now I'm going to start my learning. That's when the effort should be put in.
Well, you mentioned earlier that there are other industries that are doing this better. So it might be good to go there for a bit there. Which ones do you look at as exemplars in this in this area?
I'm thinking more around innovation rather than digital learning specifically, but in my
digital. Yeah, let's talk about digital innovation.
It seems like every sector is going through a digital disruption of some kind, and the sectors or the companies that are winning within that environment are the ones that are reading the play and staying at the forefront. And so, you know, that term that you hear at a lot of the conferences that you go to now, Uber yourself before you're Kodak'd, really, you know, it really sums it up. On my Instagram feed, I keep seeing there's this advertisement for a particular university. I can't remember the one, but Blockbuster continually turned down Netflix. Was that right? Yeah, Blockbuster turning down Netflix about acquisition offers back in the late 90s or something, you know, as the introduction to a case study of, you know, what not to do in the age of disruption.
Sure. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. I mean, Kodak has been studied in all... the Kodak case study has been studied in all sorts of business schools as the, you know, here's a company who had digital... photography as a technology and suppressed it to protect its film industry. Well, we saw where that led. But maybe looking at other firms, something like Nokia, which I don't know if most people know that Nokia started off as a tire company.
I didn't know that. So how did they get into phones?
Well, it got to the point where it saw that the tire business wasn't going to actually do any good, and completely renewed itself into a digital phone company. And then now it's going through its next renewal into optics, and it's quite an interesting case study in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, I remember the time when Ericsson and Nokia were, you know, the new powerhouses, and then all of a sudden, you know, no one had Nokias in the early 2010s because it was all Apple and Samsung. So, you know, I guess that it's another. It just goes to show that, you know, Apple. I mean, everyone knows about Apple, but the main thing that Apple did was realize that the iPod, which was the greatest invention of my childhood, you know, late childhood, but still, you know, like that was the ultimate, to have your whole music library in your pocket. Now, a lot of people don't even have music libraries because they just have Spotify and they have access to everything. But they even recognize, see, this great invention that we've made, it's obsolete already because of this other thing that we're going to do. You know, that's, I think, the lesson from this disruptive age, that it's going to happen. So you might as well stay on the forefront of it so you don't get Kodaked. Now, education, I think a lot of people in education felt that, you know, well, that's not going to happen to us. We're immune to this. And then COVID-19 happened. And, you know, it depends on how you see it. I know a lot of people see it differently, but I think the explanation that I've heard recently that really resonated with me, not just for education, but for everything, was that this has been a great acceleration. You know, we've had a glimpse into the future here, where things have accelerated, and we can see, you know, which industries are headed for disruption and which industries are going to remain pretty resilient. And you can look at that from, you know, consumer figures or even the stock market, you know, things that have crashed and stayed down might be in a bit of trouble. Things that have crashed and then come straight back up again, pretty resilient. The best ones are the ones that didn't crash in the first place. The only one I can think of in the Australian contest was A2 Milk. I don't think A2 Milk went down at all because people thought, well, we need milk.
People have still got to eat. But you're prepared to make some calls on the disruptors in education from your perspective? Where are the disruptors from what you can see?
Let's see if I'll make some calls. I don't think I've got the courage to make any calls right now, but maybe at the end of what I'm about to say,
it's okay. I don't think Warren Buffett will be listening. You'll be okay.
You can tell this is unscripted to the audience listening, purposely so. Put it this way, I think over the last, I'll say 10 years, but it's been longer than that, but definitely over the last 10 years, online learning has been creeping in, and what I would like to call digital learning, it's been coming on, but it's really been a tack on to the main game, which is the physical campus and turning up in the physical classroom or lecture theatre, you know, turning up face to face. Here's the university. There's this online bit somewhere that you have to log into, and I'm not quite sure what that is, but it's there and maybe you want to use it. And, you know, sometimes lectures get recorded and, you know, or might not get recorded because the academic's forgotten to press record, or, you know, it's been this tack on thing. I think we need to flip that. And I'm not saying that in the flipped learning sense, another term that we tend to use quite a lot.
Well, flipping, you mean where the emphasis was put, where once that was on the edge, you're saying it should be in the centre.
I think the digital campus, the digital presence of the educational institution needs to start becoming front and centre, because not just because of things like COVID-19, but just the fact that we live in a digital age and everything is online now, we need our institutions to be in that space and present in that space. That's where the beginning of the experience for our learners needs to be. Sorry if there's a lot of background noise here. This room on level 8 in Brookfield Place is literally shaking from the wind outside. Maybe it's just ominous prediction of what I'm about to say. But the learning journey starts before they walk on the campus, right? You know, when someone has a glimmer in their eye of, maybe I might do that course, or maybe I want to be this, which means I'm going to have to learn all about this. For the most part, those people are not walking onto a campus, knocking on the first door. They're saying, hey, I want to find out how to be a neuroscientist or something like that. They're going to go online and they're going to find information about that. And that's where that digital experience needs to begin. That they should be virtually walking into our campus from that moment. And the experience remaining in that digital space. And then heavily and beautifully augmented by one day being able to walk onto a campus. You know, rather than the campus is the center of things, and then there's this digital bit that we're ignoring because it's easier to ignore than to address. I don't think we can live in that world anymore.
No, well, that's probably a good example. So what you're saying, this student walks onto the campus, they've already engaged with their app, and the app knows that this student is on the campus because it will have already made contact with the campus systems, and the phone would have been able to pick up that it's on the campus, it's geolocated, and it's seamless. Like you said, there is no obstacle to them operating in a digital space or a physical space.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, I mean, obviously in this age, we've got to be careful about things like privacy as well. But, you know, if you want to engage with a university and you're willing to opt into that experience, then yes, you know, opt in. You're part of this community now, and hopefully you'll become part of our alumni, because we're going to create this great experience for you where you're going to be able to come in and have this great, engaging learning journey with a learning community, which is a really important part of digital learning. I think people forget that. Like, they think digital learning and they think this is this self-paced solo journey, when that doesn't have to be the case. And designed well, a digital learning experience should be, having its foundation in a sense of community, you know. So the product, if we can use that crude term in education, the product that we want to provide is an experience in our digital campus with our community of learners, which is, as I said, augmented with face-to-face whenever necessary. And that will depend on the course. You know, so for instance, something like, I mean, if you're studying medicine, you're not going to be able to do that all fully online. You know, you're going to be heavily reliant on world-class facilities at your university in partnership with a hospital or a network of hospitals, bringing it back to Navitas CNI's context. You know, working in creative media is going to mean working with studio equipment, whether that be film or audio. You know, working in clinical psychology environments is going to be, you know, working with laboratories and those kinds of things. You know, that is the augmentation. But the through line through all of these educational institutions is that digital experience and that digital campus. And we really need to flip the model where it's not digital as a peripheral thing, but digital at the center.
Well, that's a pretty good concept to finish with. And I think it's been a really interesting conversation to just really, you know, explore the tip of this iceberg. So thanks again, Josh. It's been great talking to you.
Great. Thanks so much, Raph.